All right. Well, thanks everybody for coming. Thanks, Aaron, for coming to your computer to give us this talk. So our speaker today is Aaron. And I'm sorry, do you say your name with a hard G or a soft G?
Mazel G. I don't know whether that's hard or soft.
That would be soft.
All right. Now I know. Good.
Great. Well, he said it, so I don't have to. And he'll tell us about reflection and algebra and topology. So please take it away.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm really excited to share this material. So this is joint with David Ayala and Nick Rosenblum. It's some fraction of a project. It's kind of spiraled out of control. The main paper is called Stratified Noncommutative Geometry, and it was just recently accepted to Memoirs. So it'll be exciting to hold a physical copy of that thing. It'll be a book. And if you'd like to follow along, essentially the same slides are here. All right, so I'll give you an overview. I'm going to tell you about this duality that's called reflection, and mostly I'll tell you what the shape of things are, and then I'll give some examples, and then I'll, depending on how much time remains, dive back into the generalities. So there's a lot of material here, and I don't necessarily expect to cover all of it, but it's prepared. Okay, so the world that we're going to be living in is stable infinity categories. You can think triangulated categories or DG categories. So in any case, the good examples to keep in mind are things like DG vector spaces or complexes over a ring, QCO of a scheme, or sheaves on, say, a topological space, or even co-sheaves. So those are the types of categories that we're going to be considering. I'll usually just say category, but I'll usually mean infinity. And now this is a theory of stratifications is the context. And this is sort of like a filtration, but rather than just being linearly ordered, it's more interesting because it can be arranged over a poset. So that's the thing that we're going to be studying. And the poset has a finiteness condition. It's called down finite. So here's the idea. If we have a category and it's stratified over a poset in a way that I'll probably define later, well, what is a stratification? You chop something up. Here's a picture of some geometric object. I've chopped it up into strata. And the question is, how can we reconstruct this object? So the strata are indexed by the elements of the poset. And well, of course, you can't expect to just know the strata. You need to know how to glue them together, and there's going to be some gluing data. So this is the abstract context of a stratified category, but good examples include, if you have a stratified scheme, you get a stratification of its quasi-current sheaves. Likewise, if you have a stratified topological space, you get a stratification of its category of sheaves. And sheaves and the strata of such a stratification is the category of sheaves on the stratum. So here's a picture of that situation. Okay, so that's the general picture of stratifications and reconstruction. And then here's the real surprise. Well, it was a surprise to me anyways. The theorem is that, well, yes, you can reconstruct the category, but in fact, you can do so in two different ways. So this is the main theorem I'll be discussing. The strata assemble in two ways, and you can reconstruct X from both. So here's X, our stratified category, and there are two different limit type constructions which give X back up to equivalence of categories. So what is going on here is that there's a gluing diagram which assembles all of the strata. So remember I wrote XP for the stratum, say sheaves on the stratum of a topological space. And there's a functor from P to stable categories which takes each element to its corresponding stratum. It takes each relation in P to a gluing functor. And yeah, so that's the type of thing you would imagine gluing data should mean. Now, this diagram, as we'll see, it's not quite just an ordinary functor. Rather, it's a left lax functor, which means that commutative triangles are sent to natural transformations. And we'll see that in an example. And then there's some sort of limit, which means gluing, compatible systems of objects. You can, when you take that limit, you get a category that is equivalent to the one you started with. So broadly speaking, objects of X are recorded by objects of the limit, which consist of compatible systems of objects and some sort of higher data going between them as well. I'll describe what this lax limit means shortly. Okay, so that's what gluing means generally. But then again, we're talking about two different ways of gluing. And the other side is, well, reflected. So there's also the reflected gluing diagram, which is a functor, again, from P to stable categories, taking each element to the stratum. So the values of these two functors are the same. But now the gluing data, these functors are different. They are reflected. So I put a check here to denote the reflected side. And now this functor is not left lax, but rather it is right lax. And over here too, you can reconstruct X. So these are two dual ways of reconstructing the original stratified category, depending on whether you go with the gluing diagram or the reflected gluing diagram. So if we want to step back even further, so this was reconstructing the category. And you know, all of this is natural, functorial, so much so that you can actually, the entire category of stratified categories is equivalent to such diagrams. And it is also equivalent to other such diagrams like that. So that's what this black is about. So strat P is categories stratified over the poset P. And then there's this construction called the gluing diagram construction. Gives us a functor. And here I've just thrown in this laxness onto the source. So it's the left laxification of a poset or really any category. It has the same objects, the same morphisms, but then anytime you see a triangle, you instead replace it with a natural transformation like that, a lax triangle. So representations of this two category into that two category, that's what I mean by left lax functors. And so this construction defines a functor this way. And because you can reconstruct this thing, in fact, the entire construction is an equivalence. And then dually over here, we've got this reflected gluing diagram construction, which is also an equivalence. And then the compatibility, I mean, here I'm reconstructing the category. So let's just say, forget the stratification. You can either take this type of lax limit over here, or you can take that type of lax limit over there. And moreover, then also these agree stratum by stratum, which I again, find quite surprising. So taking the pth stratum of the stratified category corresponds to evaluating at the element P of the poset. So finally, what is reflection? Reflection is the equivalence that you get when you just jump straight from here to here. So passing through stratified categories, but you don't need to explicitly refer to them. This is an equivalence, which is new. And this is what I'll mostly be giving examples of. But of course, the perspective of stratifications is also going to be helpful for us. So more than that, there's also an explicit formula for how do you get the gluing functors in terms of the reflected gluing functors. I should have said earlier, this is all a generalization of something called the Reclamont, which is a French word I'm sure I mispronounced. That's the very special case where the poset is just the two-element poset, 0 < 1. So Reclamont is a way of reconstructing some category from like a closed open decomposition. And well, closed open decomposition is a very special case of a stratification of a topological space or whatever. And this is the categorical analog of that, this stratifications over more general posets. Okay, so yes, what I was going to say is that there's a formula for how you go back and forth between the gluing functors and the reflected gluing functors. And I'll illustrate this in example, but let me just show what the shape is. So gamma PQ, upper P lower Q, means the gluing functor from P to Q. Again, let me point out that if you go from P to R, it depends. In general, there's only a natural transformation. It's not a commutative triangle. Whether you go directly or you jump through Q in the meantime. This is what essentially contributes the interestingness of this formula. So the reflected gluing functor from P to Q in general is assembled in a way I'll describe in a second from the gluing functors for all different phi, where phi is a sequence that runs from P to Q, but perhaps not directly. So maybe I should have done P to R. In that case, gamma phi is being indexed over either you go directly or you go indirectly. So there's some diagram of gluing functors. And then there's a construction called the total fiber. And what this asks, so there's always an initial way of getting from P to Q, an initial route called go directly, as opposed to don't go directly. So this is some diagram with an initial object, and you can say to what extent is this a limit diagram? There's a way of making that precise. You take the limit of all but the initial term, and then you say what's the fiber of the canonical map. If it's an equivalence, then it is a limit diagram. And so the total fiber measures the extent to which it is not a limit diagram, and it's the fiber of that map. So in short, it measures the failure to be a limit diagram. And then over here, we've got a dual thing. So dually, the gluing functors are a total cofiber of the reflected gluing functors as they assemble likewise. Okay, so that's the general shape of things. And I just want to give a basic example to orient ourselves before I go into the more interesting examples. So here's an example. If I have, if I'm thinking about Z modules, so you can, this is already interesting for abelian groups, but it applies to derived abelian groups too. So chain complexes up to quasi-iso. So M is a Z module. I can reconstruct M in two dual ways. This is called arithmetic fracture. So one way is, this one is maybe more familiar. I need to know the rationalization. I need to know all of the P completions for all primes P. And then there's some gluing data. So what do I do? Well, I know the P completions. I can rationalize that. And there's a canonical map to the rationalization. But then what I also need to know is the map from the rationalization of M to the rationalization of this infinite product. And that's the extra gluing data that is needed. Dually, and then M is the fiber product, the pullback. Dually, I can just remember all of the P torsifications, also the co-rationalization, just the dual construction to rationalization, and then also the co-rationalization of the sum of P torsifications. There's always a canonical map this way, and then I additionally need to know this data, the data of that gluing map. So this is a very special example. It's the case where the poset is just two elements, brackets one. And it's a very special example of this reconstruction. So I'm reconstructing the category of Z modules in these two different ways. Here's one other example just to put us in the mindset is that if I have a topological space and it's stratified over a poset P, then let me name the strata T sub little p, then the category of sheaves on that topological space is likewise stratified. It's actually over the opposite poset. just sort of like QCO versus constructible type of duality. And then you can ask, what are the gluing functors, in the gluing diagram? And well, there are two of them, the green side and the blue side. And these gluing, so first of all, as I mentioned earlier, the strata of the stratified category are sheaves on the strata. And then the gluing and reflected gluing functors are push-pull, but what are they specifically? This is star push-pull, and that's shriek push-pull. So a very special, well, I'll discuss this example in more detail once we've seen a bit more of the generalities. Okay, so that is an overview. Let me just zoom out here for a moment. That's an overview of what I'm talking about here. So stable categories, stratifications, which are like filtrations, but over posets. Here's a picture of that. And the surprising thing that I'm telling you about is that there are two different ways of reassembling them. And the composite equivalence is what we call reflection. Okay, so please interrupt me with questions. Other than that, I'm happy to just continue. Okay, so yeah, I'll describe some examples and applications first, and then with whatever time remains, I'll discuss the generalities of stratified categories. Okay, so recall that these constructions that reconstruct X they're not quite limits, but rather they are lax limits. So let me begin just by giving you a sense of what that means. And then I'll be able to describe some examples. So let's suppose we have a diagram of categories indexed over I, and they're called C bullet. Well, what is the limit? This is supposed to, so this is a homotopical limit. So it's not like, maybe naively you'd think, oh, it's a bunch of objects that are all equal as you move through the transition maps in the diagram, but rather we want isomorphisms. That's the more robust construction. You could call this the homotopy limit or infinity categorical limit. So the limit of this diagram is a system of objects and then isomorphisms. For any morphism in I, you have this compatibility. The push forward of Xi through the monodromy functor is Xj, specified by an iso. And then higher coherence data, of course. So now what is a lax limit? Well, it's still a system of objects, but now instead of asking for isomorphisms, you can simply ask for morphisms. You have relaxed the condition of strict compatibility and replaced it with lax compatibility. And of course, there are two ways to do this. And for good reasons, one is called left and one's called right. So left lax means that you get a morphism out of the push forward. Right lax means that you get a morphism into the push forward. You don't have to remember that. We'll see soon enough which ones are applicable for us. Here's an example to illustrate this. Let's just say we have a constant functor. Then what is the left lax limit? Well, it's a system of objects, but now these are all just the category C. So it's just objects of C indexed by the category by objects of I. And then, well, these monodromy functors are all the identity functors. So it's now just a morphism from Xi to Xj for every morphism from I to J in I and so on. Hopefully that makes it plausible that ultimately this is just functors from I to C. That's the left lax limit. And then dually, the right lax limit, it's functors from the opposite because the morphism goes backwards. So this is a, and then one slight generalization here. If I have my diagram itself may be lax. In fact, it is, as we saw earlier. So this is also for good reasons called a left lax functor from brackets two, which means zero less than one lax of two. And what's relevant is to take the right lax limit. So what is that? Well, let's just try to invent the notion. It's first of all an object in each category, A, B, and C inside of curly A, B, and C. And then it's right lax, so it's morphisms backwards to the value under the functor. But then there's a little bit of weirdness. Things don't line up as much as you might naively guess. Namely, so we've got this map from C to GB. That's this right lax structure map. But then we've already got this gamma for gluing map. We've already got this map down here. And we can apply, this map up here, we could apply G to it. Meanwhile, C maps to HA as one of these. And additionally, there's this natural transformation from H to F followed by G. And that's that lives right here. So H going to GF. And we need to ask for the additional data of a homotopy that makes this square commute. So this is an infinity categorical thing. And I think there are a number of places in sort of like triangulated category literature, for instance, in tensor triangular geometry, that progress was obstructed by missing this higher coherence ultimately, because it's not possible if you pass to the homotopy category. So this is a genuinely infinity categorical thing where you record the homotopy that witnesses the commutativity of the square. And the reason that this like kind of higher data is showing up is because of this clash, the right lax limit of a left lax diagram. So I admit it is a weird notion, and yet it is the thing that shows up in geometric and topological examples. So I've come to embrace it. Okay, so let's do a first example here. So I'm going to talk about reflection as it relates to chain complexes. We'll see. So again, here's this composite equivalence secretly passing through categories stratified over brackets two between left lax representations of brackets two and right lax representations of brackets two. So left lax means the arrow goes up, right lax means the arrow goes down. So this one actually commutes. So I'm starting with a very easy example. There's a natural transformation, but it's invertible. So this diagram is just constant at V. Let's think V equals like dg vect, but it could be anything. So I'll start over here with the constant diagram. Looks like that. Now, one thing I can do is take the left lax limit. And as we just discussed, that just gives me functors from brackets two. On the other hand, I could pass through reflection equivalence and I get some other diagram. It has the same values, but the gluing functors are different. And there's going to be, in general, a natural transformation. And then part of the theorem here is that this triangle commutes. So the right lax limit of this diagram is also that same category of representations. Okay, so let's recall the formula for the gluing functor in terms of the reflected gluing functor. So this is a pretty small case. So for instance, the 0,1 gluing functor, it's some total cofiber involving all of the reflected gluing functors going from 0 to 1, possibly passing through elsewhere. But look, there's only one of them. And so this total cofiber is pretty degenerate. It's just the shift of that reflected gluing functor, which is the identity. So ultimately, this one is just suspension, just the shift. Here's the answer right here to what those are. So we've just found that this first one is suspension. And likewise, the second one is also suspension. The 0,2 gluing functor is the only one that's interesting. So what is it? It's the total cofiber of, well, now there are two ways to get from 0 to 2. You either go directly or you go indirectly. And well, in this particular diagram, it actually commutes. So these are both, but both of these two ways of getting from 0 to 2 are just the identity. And then there's these extra shifts in here. So we're asking, to what extent does this fail to be a Colimit diagram? Well, it is a Colimit diagram. That's an equivalence. And so the total cofiber is 0. It is a Colimit diagram. So here then is the gluing diagram that corresponds to this reflected gluing diagram. It's this, V, V, and V, dg vect, and suspension and suspension, but then this functor is 0, and there's a natural transformation. It's the only possible one.
Burn? Is this fact that like the bottom arrow going to be zero, is that just sort of coming from the fact that the left side commuted on the nose?
Exactly.
Or is it something, so just as soon as it commutes, it'll be zero like this.
Yep. That's an if and only if, because going from zero to two, the post set of ways of getting from zero to two is always just zero to two and zero, one, two. And, and total cofiber just asks, to what extent do those fail to agree?
I see. Okay, great.
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Okay, so we already saw the easy route in this commutative triangle. The left lax limit here is just functors from brackets two into DG vect. But now let's go around the interesting way. Well, first we reflect, so we get this thing, and then we take the right lax limit. And this is the one that I just described, this generalization of the notion of a right lax limit of a left lax diagram. And let's see what we get. So again, we get an object in each category and then these various structure maps. So an object in each category, those are just DG vector spaces, V0, V1, and V2. And then structure maps, and I'm going to suggestively call it del 1 and del 2. And then again, you apply this monodromy functor and you need this commutative square. And what are we seeing? Well, V2 to V1 to V0 is required to factor through zero. What is that? That is saying that del squared is zero. That is the definition of a chain complex. So what we've learned is that this functor category is equivalent to three-term chain complexes. Ignoring the shifts here, you can renormalize if you like. I just didn't want to write anything incorrect, but I'm happy to say something incorrect. okay, and now you can also extend this. Brackets two was just kind of the first case, but we can also do it over, let's say, non-negative integers and take the constant diagram. You reflect it, and then you're getting a diagram that looks like this. Now, once again, the left lax limit is just the functor category. And then the right lax limit, if you trace through what is the right lax limit of this, you're seeing, well, it's a DG vector space, one for each of those, maps to the image of that, which are just these differentials, and then factorizations through zero and higher homotopy coherences for all of those. The right lax limit is something that deserves to be called non-negatively graded chain complexes inside of this stable infinity category. And reflection then is the surprising equivalence between these two things. Maybe it's not so surprising. This exists already. It's called Dold-Kahn, or really Lurie-Dold-Kahn in this generality. And what does it do? The assertion in different language is that you can record a chain complex in terms of a filtered object. And who is that filtered object? It is the realizations of its skeleta. So it, along with the maps that relate them. So certainly that's a construction you can do. And the surprising thing is that it's an equivalence. Okay, so that was the first example I wanted to describe. So again, we're doing reflection in just a very simple example, constant diagram on one side, and we're already getting something that's pretty interesting, Lurie-Dold-Kahn. Okay, so here's another example that I really like. There's a little background first. So we've got our post set. Let's take some abelian group, and for any function, just from the underlying set of the post set, let's define a new function called f hat. It's a Fourier transform. And how do we define it? Well, the value of f hat at p is the sum of f, the values of f at all elements less than or equal to p. So the sum over all q. So that's a Fourier transform. And then a classical theorem is called Mobius inversion. You could call it Fourier inversion. And it says that you can go back. If you know f hat, you can get f. And how do you do it? Well, the assertion is that there are two different bases for the abelian group of functions into A. This, we've expressed a function in its pointwise basis. Here, we've expressed a function in terms of its down closure basis. Again, there are some mild finiteness hypotheses on the poset. And then the assertion is that you can recover the values at points by summing with weights the values on down closures. And these weights are quite interesting. This is called the Mobius function. If you're familiar with the Mobius function in number theory, that's for the poset of positive integers and divisibility. But this is something that you can do for any poset. This is an integer, and that's the matrix coefficient for this Fourier inversion formula. Okay, so that's the background here. And what I'll tell you about is a categorified Mobius inversion. So once again, this is pretty simple on one side. It's just a constant diagram. So it'll be constant at V, dg vector, whatever. And so in fact, this is strictly generalization of what we just saw. So again, we've got this constant diagram. The left lax limit is simply the functor category. And let's think of that as P filtered dg vector spaces. So functors from poset into dg vect. And let me just set some notation. So V bullet will be the name for such a thing, a P filtered vector space. So the value at little p is the P filtered component. And then there's also an associated graded that you can define. Now, this is a familiar notion for linearly ordered things, but it makes sense for poset ordered, poset filtered quantities. And in fact, we've already discussed it. It's the total cofiber of all of the stuff less than or equal to P. So again, you say, to what extent does the value at P fail to be captured as the colimit of all of the values less than or equal, or less than P? And that total cofiber measures it. And this is the usual associated graded for a linearly ordered set. Okay, so that's the easy part of this computation. Now let's go through reflection. So again, this is some sort of lax diagram, indexed by P again, a diagram of categories. So the values do not change. The values are all dg vect. But now for each relation, q less than p, it's going to be some interesting functor, no longer just the identity functors as were the gluing functors over here. Rather, if you unpack the construction, you'll see that this functor is given by tensoring with a space that's cooked up out of the poset and this pair of elements. And I'll call it the Mobius space. So this is some pointed finite space. Just a hint of where we're headed is this theorem that I think goes back to like the 1930s. It's called Phillips-Hall's theorem, which says that the Euler characteristic, the reduced Euler characteristic of this pointed finite space equals the value of the Mobius function, the matrix coefficient over here. So that's immediately a suggestion that there ought to be some categorification of this Mobius inversion, and that is exactly what I'm describing here. So this gluing functor is tensoring with the Mobius space. If these are literally dg vector spaces, then this is AKA chains on this space with values in that dg vector space. So what is the main result? Well, a corollary of this general theory of reflection, specifically the fact that the right lax limit of this diagram is also just P filtered vector spaces. What's surprising then is that you get a filtration of the pointwise values over the stuff less than or equal to it. And then we have an explicit description of the associated graded of that filtration. And the associated graded, this is what's being categorified. The associated graded, the constituents of that, rather than being a weighted sum of these down closure values, it's now a weighted sum of these filtration values. So this is the categorified pointwise basis, the associated graded pieces, and then this is the down closure basis for P filtered vector spaces.
So I'm sorry, I got lost. So in the example that we were doing, you sort of told us, oh, look, it turns out that this reflected morphism is, it turns out to be zero.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so that, I guess that like, so these spaces are sometimes empty, I guess. Is it how typical if I started like, I guess I sort of, then I was like, zoning out for a moment, and I just assumed that there were going to be a lot of zeros after reconstruction.
Hmm. Yeah, great question. So the this was a total cofiber indexed over the poset of ways of getting from 0 to 2,
mm-hmm.
and that poset has a very a contractible shape. It's the arrow. Here's its earlier element. Here's its later element.
Okay.
But in general, if I have some interesting poset and I have an element, a lower element and a bigger element, and I ask, what is the poset of ways of getting from here to there? That can be arbitrarily interesting. You can get any shape out of it. And indeed, the formula for the Mobius, or the definition of the Mobius space. So you take the poset, well, you take the stuff between the two elements, Q and P, mm-hmm. and then you puncture the top and bottom.
That's it. Okay.
And then you suspend that space twice.
Okay.
So for brackets too, you really just do get a single point. So which is the, you know, the terminal point infinite space. But yeah, for more interesting, like take any finite space represented as a poset, this is possible, mm-hmm. Add a minimal and maximal element, and then the Mobius space with respect to the minimal and maximal is going to be the double suspension of that original space.
Okay.
So yeah, these can be arbitrarily interesting depending on the shape of the poset.
Okay.
And in fact, so this is about, I've said it so far about DG vector spaces, but in fact, you can apply all of this same reasoning. Well, I'm sorry, let me say one other thing first. So in general, you get this interesting filtration of the pointwise values via the down closure values with matrix coefficients involved. Well, that's a filtration. It gives you a spectral sequence and it runs like this. So let me just point out the surprising part. Usually a spectral sequence, you start out with the associated gradeds and you run to the filtered pieces, and this one is reversed. You start out with the filtered pieces and you run to the associated graded pieces. And you have this interesting weight coming in. So just to bring it down to earth more, if we apply this specifically to a P stratified topological space, we get the Mobius spectral sequence becomes a spectral sequence that runs from the cohomologies of the closures of strata. That's the sort of down closure thing. And it converges to the cohomologies of the strata themselves. So you can imagine it's like, you know, all the closures, and then in what manner do you have to peel away the cohomologies of the lower strata to get just the cohomology of this stratum rather than closures. And this spectral sequence was previously discovered by Peterson. And this is a generalization of it. Okay, so again, this is a categorification of Mobius inversion. And in fact, it literally gives you Mobius inversion in this abelian group as well. Okay, so here's another example. So there is a really beautiful story called Reflection, BGP Reflection. Bernstein, Gelfand, Pomonarev, I believe. So here's the theorem. If you have a quiver and you have some element which is only a source, so only arrows coming out of it, and only finitely many arrows coming out of it, there's an operation called mutation, I'll call Q prime the mutation, which is where you just reverse the directions of all of those arrows. And now here's the theorem, is that representations of these two quivers are equivalent. So functors into DG vect, or really any stable infinity kind of thing. And here's a proof that uses reflection. So specifically, it uses reflection over this very simple poset brackets one. So first of all, this composite equivalence, again, it keeps the values at zero and one, and it just changes what the monodromy functor is. And in this case, it's quite easy. It's just the same up to a shift. So the reflected gluing functor here is just a shift of the unreflected gluing functor. So that's the general fact coming from reflection. Now let's apply it to these quivers. So this choice of a distinguished object X, which is only a source, and then likewise with Q prime, X is now only a sink. These give you functors from Q prime to the walking arrow and from Q to the walking arrow. And these give us stratifications of these functor categories over brackets one. So inside of here, I can, both of these functor categories lie in here separately. Here's one of them, here's the other one. And then I can just look at what their gluing diagram and respectively reflected gluing diagram are. One of them is a functor that I'll call F, and the other one is a functor which is just a shift of F. And it's a simple formula. Ultimately, this F just says, if you've labeled little x in some way by some vector space V, then how do you label the remaining bits of the quiver? Q0 is everything else. And the answer is that you put V anywhere that maps to X, and you put zero otherwise. So it's a very simple functor. And then you can just compute that this gluing diagram aligns with that reflected gluing diagram under this reflection equivalence. In particular, their lax limits, appropriate lax limits, agree. And that is to say that these original stratified categories were in fact the same. So it's a kind of funny usage of reflection. But there it is. This is a very quick proof of this BGP reflection. So here's a pretty neat consequence, is that if you have a finite tree and you have any two orientations of it, then representations are equivalent. What is, however, interesting, if you have some finite tree and you look at like some sort of graph of possible orientations of it, and you can draw arrows between them as you do these sorts of mutations, it is not the case that if you go around this graph and come back to where you started, that you necessarily get the identity functor. So in other words, there is like a local system of categories, all of whose fibers are these representations. But in general, it's an interesting local system. Okay, so those were the examples that I wanted to discuss. And now with the remaining time, I'll tell you a little bit about stratified categories. So in fact, I'll mainly discuss brackets one, there's more in the general case, but this illustrates already a lot. So let's put ourselves in the context of a stratified topological space just to illustrate all this. So here's a topological space. It's got a closed open decomposition. That is a stratification over brackets one. It's the same thing. And this gives us this whole big mess of categories and functors. So we've got sheaves on the space, and then sheaves on the open, sheaves on the closed. Let's even simplify for ourselves. And let's say sheaves that are locally constant on the open and on the closed. And then let's restrict to constructible sheaves in the middle. So that means that when you restrict to both strata, it's open and closed, or I'm sorry, it's locally constant. So here are some pictures. Let's just take X to be the cone on some other topological space. And then let's give that a closed open decomposition just by the cone point and then the remainder. So here's a first example, it's the circle. Cone on the circle is the disk. There's the cone point, there's the complement. Here's one that's slightly more interesting, is the cone on a torus. There's the cone point is the closed, and then the punctured thing is the open complement. What's interesting now is that the local topology around the cone point is non-trivial here. It's a torus. So in this case, then what are all of these functors? Well, it's let's do the sides first. So first of all, locally constant sheaves on a point, that's just DG vector spaces. Locally constant sheaves on this product with the half open interval. Well, locally constant sheaves, that's a homotopy invariant quantity. So it's the same as locally constant sheaves on the topological space, which is the same thing as functors from its fundamental groupoid into V. So that's what local systems always are, is representations of the fundamental groupoid. And now here's the interesting one, constructible sheaves on the cone. There's a generalization of this construction, the fundamental groupoid, called the exit path infinity category. So what that is, its objects are once again the points of the topological space, but now paths, rather than just being arbitrary paths from point A to point B, you only allow them to exit from a deeper stratum to a less deep stratum. So in this case, this is the deeper stratum, this is the less deep stratum. And ultimately you get the same shape, but then with an initial object adjoined. So this topological cone construction is corresponds to this left cone categorical construction. And then there's all of these functors and there are various push-pull functors, and I'll describe the relevant ones for us as we go. So this is an instance of what I mentioned earlier called a Reclamont. So this is an abstract definition. It's a diagram like this. So you should think of it as like a categorified extension sequence. Here's the category in the middle, here's the kernel, here's the quotient. And then there's these six functors that are adjoint. The key demand is that all three sequences are exact sequences in the sense that kernel equals image. So the kernel of this projection is the image of this inclusion and so on. So here's some notation mnemonics. Y is restricted Yoneda and nu is the inclusion of the null objects with respect to restricted Yoneda. So those are, that's perhaps a familiar way of describing the quotient, is when you have these two adjoints at least. So now let me tell you about ordinary reconstruction for a Reclamont. So I'll call this, first of all, microcosm reconstruction, meaning object level. So for any object, curly F, because let's think about sheaves. So for any object, you can reconstruct it as a pullback. This is as I was describing with abelian groups. It's as a pullback, you either go down and then back in by IR, or you can go project down and back in by nu. These both have unit maps. And then here is a more interesting thing. You go down and in, and then you continue, but through the other functor, and you get into Q, and then you include back by nu. So this is a square in X, and it's easy to check that it's actually a pullback square. So it's a reconstruction for the original object F. Now this map is just a unit map, so that comes for free, but this map is additional data that you need to remember if you are hoping to reconstruct F. So this pullback square, I mean, these are all functors. So this is certainly natural. Better than that, it's unique in the following sense of that I'll call macrocosm reconstruction. So this is reconstruction, not just of the object, but of the entire category. And this is again on the ordinary as opposed to reflected side. I'll illustrate reflection in just a sec. So given that I can reconstruct the object like this, the whole category is then it's the right lax limit of this composite functor, this red in through one and then project down through the other side. So that functor is not generally zero. these sequences are exact, but certainly this composite is not really zero. Okay, so what is the Wright-Lax limit? Well, once again, it's an object here, an object there, and then a morphism into the value under that functor of the object here. So specifically, what do I do? Well, I just take my object here and I project it into the kernel, I project it into the quotient, and then there's this natural gluing map that comes from the data of X itself. And that reconstructs the entire category. So that's an equivalence. So let's go back to topology. What is this composite functor? Well, this is star push forward, star pull back, which is just stock at the cone point. So this is a local system on K, which is just like this torus right here, or this half open interval cross torus. And then you take the star extension to the cone, and then you just evaluate here. So what is that composite? Well, that's ultimately just global sections or derived global sections. So here's the picture in the simpler case to draw of the cone on the circle. And what is it measuring? Well, this value right here is, well, it's taking cohomology around that circle. And what really matters is the link between the strata, the cone point versus the other stuff. So you can imagine it being more interesting when the local topology is more interesting. And then there's a gluing map. So ultimately what that's telling us is that a constructible sheaf on the cone equals its value on the puncture, its value at the cone point, and a map to the global sections of the sheaf on the main space K. And I mean, look, we could have already known that just from this description. So we're recovering something. It's all consistent. What is a functor out of a left cone is a functor out of here, and then a value at the cone, and then a map into the limit. That's what we're seeing right here in this reconstruction theorem. Okay, so let me conclude by describing then reflection in this first interesting case of where the poset is brackets one. We won't be able to see the interesting shapes of the posets coming up, but that's okay. Okay, so let's return to this Reclamont, just general categorified extension sequence of X by a kernel and the quotient. And here is the reconstruction that we just saw. This is involving the green gluing functor. So you project down to the kernel, you project down to the quotient, and then there's some gluing data involving green. Well, a completely dual computation tells you that you also can reconstruct F as the pushout of a dual construction, where now you instead project down and include light this way, and here you project down on this side and include that way, and then there's some gluing data yet again. So this is a gluing morphism. This is a reflected gluing morphism, and those are both participating in the corresponding reconstruction theorems. So both sides of macrocosm reconstruction are the category is simultaneously the Wright-Lax limit of the green composite and the left-Lax limit of the blue composite. And you can see, as previously advertised, that the values of this functor at the poset, the two points in the poset are the same. They're both k at the beginning and q at the end, but the functors themselves are different. Now, it is, however, true that these functors only differ by a shift. That's a general computation. And in fact, you can see it right here. All four of these squares are exact. Therefore, the composite square is exact. And these two are zero. So this is the shift of that, or that's the shift of this. So that's an instance of this general formula for gluing functors in terms of reflected gluing functors and reversely. And so finally, then here is the main theorem again, but in this special case. Should I end here or go till the top of the hour? There's one more thing I could say.
I mean, if you want to say a little more, we aren't very strict about ending time.
Okay, great. Yeah, let me say this then, since it was advertised in the abstract and all of that. Great. This category of Reclamants itself has an involution called take opposite categories everywhere. Take opposite categories, and this is clearly an equivalence. And well, the way that taking opposites interacts with adjunctions is such that the left adjoint inclusion here becomes the right adjoint inclusion over here on the opposite side. And so this blue composite functor, the one that was participating in reflected reconstruction, turns into the green composite functor, just following it through. And so what we see is that the reflected gluing diagram, as just discussed, is in fact the gluing diagram of the opposite, and then you take opposites yet again. So in some sense, all of this is just a matter of saying the word op very in very well chosen places. So this illustrates a general relationship between reflection and gradient duality, which I'll end by describing. So Verdier duality for a locally compact Hausdorff topological space, as proved by Lurie, is an equivalence between the opposite category of sheaves and the category of sheaves in the opposite category. And the equivalence is implemented by taking compactly supported sections. So you might be familiar with a different formulation of Verdier duality, which is not always an equivalence, which is called HOM into the dualizing complex. So this goes just from sheaves to sheaves, or really sheaves opposite. So this is, you could call it maybe Verdier pre-dual. And this equivalence, you can post-compose with taking linear duals of your sheaf here, and that gives you a sheaf valued in V. So this triangle commutes. So now the key feature of Verdier duality is that it interchanges. So this Verdier duality equivalence, as we vary the topological space, let's say we've got some open, then on one side of Verdier duality, we have star push forward, and that is interchanged with Shriek push forward on the other side. So you may recall from the very beginning, I was saying that the gluing functors are push-pull, but on one side you have star and one side you have Shriek. And this is an instance of that as well. More specifically, Verdier duality, which is this equivalence between sheaves in one place and sheaves in another place, interchanges the ordinary reconstruction on one. So we've got a once and for all stratified topological space. You get its sheaves that's stratified over the poset. Its sheaves here are also stratified over the poset. And if you do ordinary reconstruction of this category, it corresponds to reflected reconstruction of that category. So this is like, I would say, a tight relationship between reflection and, so here's an example. This is like a tight relationship between reflection and Verdier duality. I'm tempted to say that reflection is like sort of a categorical generalization of Verdier duality, but that's not quite true. I can't find a really precise assertion, so I'll just say they're closely related. And here's a specific example to illustrate. Here's a closed open decomposition of the real line. Constructible sheaves are representations of this. Constructible sheaves over here on the opposite category are representations like this. And in fact, this Verdier duality equivalence is an instance of VGP reflection that we saw earlier. Okay, I'll end there. Thanks a lot for listening.
Any questions? So I had one. I wonder if you can...
Aaron, I have to head off. Sir.
Yeah, good to see you, Theo.
Great, bye. So you were saying this about Verdier duality. I mean, is there any hope of kind of thinking about the poset of like all sub varieties and thinking of Verdier duality is kind of doing this reflection using like all the sub varieties at once, right? Because somehow the I think the issue you're having is somehow like what you've described is not Verdier duality for all sheaves. It's Verdier duality for sheaves that are smooth for a particular filtration. And you somehow need to think about all the filtrations.
Yeah. Like an immediate, right. Exactly. So an immediate obstruction to this being like kind of Verdier duality for all categories is that if your dualizing complex is not constructible with respect to the given stratification, then this equivalence doesn't respect. I mean, this corollary no longer holds. There is a general. So we thought about this for schemes, and I'm sure that, we thought about it for QCO. And I'm sure that something similar holds for constructible sheaves, which is that there's this sort of canonical stratification of any, of QCO of any scheme that we call its adelic stratification. So for example, for spec Z, you get this arithmetic fracture square. More generally, it's sort of like, iterated localization completion type of business for reconstructing say modules over ring. And what you're describing sounds like the constructible version of that. So that definitely seems possible, but I hadn't thought about it before.
I mean, this is some version of kind of like the Gaudemont resolution.
Yeah, exactly. It's like just kind of the stupidest thing the only thing you can do universally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very intriguing. One thing that I don't know if I have an actual question about this, but one of the things I like to think about, so this BGP reflection on the level of quiver varieties is giving you a flop. I think that's right. Right, that the two orientations like correspond to two different GIT parameters, and you can think of this BGP like on the level of objects as being something about like a flop on the quiver varieties. And there's also an interesting equivalence of derived categories for let's say coherent sheaves on the quiver variety that comes from that flop. I'm just sort of like, I don't know. One of the things that's always weird about this quiver space is like, how do you translate between things happening in a category and things happening on the category of sheaves on the moduli of objects in that first category? So, I don't know. I'd like one of the things that's very interesting for me is, stuff more like these sort of equivalences of categories coming from flops. And I just kind of wonder if you can think about these in those terms.
That's a great point. I mean, the naive guess is that, some manner of stratification here corresponds to some manner of stratification over there. I certainly don't have anything better to say, but I'm excited.
Yeah. a related but possibly different phenomenon is what are called perverse equivalences. Have you thought at all about this?
What are you referring to?
So perverse equivalence, these again, is just sort of a common phenomenon that comes up in derived equivalences in representation theory, is that, you'll have, Abelian category representations of some algebra, and you'll have some filtration of that by something like, dimension of support or something. And when you do a derived, there'll be derived equivalence to modules over some different algebra. And what ends up happening is it's almost that simples over one algebra go to shifts of simples over the other algebra. And that's not quite right. It's like there's some associated graded, where on the level of the associated graded, on each of the pieces, the equivalence is a shift in the derived category, but it's a shift by different amounts on different pieces.
Yeah, that sounds super reflection-y.
So like, you know, this BGP thing, I think is an example of that, where you have one symbol, the symbol on the node you're reflecting in that gets shifted in the derived category, and all the other symbols don't get shifted. And well, they don't get sent to simples, but they get sent to simples when you mod out by the stuff that's concentrated on that one. Like when you forget that the node you're reflecting in from the quiver, right? So it's like you think about, yeah, there's a subcategory of stuff that sits on that node, you mod out by that subcategory. After modding out by that subcategory, the BGP reflection is just a boring equivalence. But on that subcategory, it acts by shift in the derived category.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for, it'd be great if you could like send me some references.
Sure.
I haven't thought about it. If that was your official question, have you thought about it? And the answer is
okay. No.
But yeah, thanks for that feedback.
Yeah, there's some cool examples of this, like blocks of the symmetric group in characteristic P, where you get like
category O, you're saying?
No, it's also, this also happens on some functors on category O, but for like blocks of representations of the symmetric group over FP, there's this famous theorem that if the decomposition group is the same, then they're derived equivalent. And like you can, it's not true that all the derived equivalences have this form, but they're generated by ones that have this form of doing, like you have some filtration of your block and you're getting some shift in the derived category, but it's different on different pieces of the filtration.
Yeah, that's awesome. What is that theorem called, or whose is it?
This was proven by Zhou Chuang, C-H... Chuang Rukier, yes. Right. Yes, this was the point of the Chuang Rukier paper.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops, I sent that to someone as a direct message accidentally. Oh yeah, so Breuil's conjecture is a more general conjecture that two blocks, that the derived category of a block of representations of a finite group only depends on the decomposition group. That's a theorem for blocks of representations of the symmetric group, and Chuang Rukier proved that theorem. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Oh, hey, Justin.
It'd be really, just thinking of like other things we've been doing, it'd be really cool if there was like some way to relate this to like a perverse Schober, but it's not really obvious like what that would be.
So this is related to what we've discussed, this possibility of like, you know, stabilized edge being having this like alternative presentation, and the word alternative, you could replace that with a reflected presentation. That's
no, I definitely no, I definitely remember that, but I'm just saying that like a stratification of a category, or like a stratified category, is like not like so much different, like. They aren't mathematically the same, but they're kind of like trying to get at the same intuitive idea.
And we know that the relationship between like spherical functors, and then you can reglue a category with that Reclamont, and then this iterated, four periodicity or eight periodicity thing.
Oh yeah. From like semi-orthogonal decompositions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that also seems intriguing. There's that general construction you can do where you keep like changing who the gluing functor is of mm-hmm. the Reclamont, and then I wonder what would be the general POSET version of that.
Cool. Or maybe just add that you could rephrase everything I just said in terms of Schoper's, like the story about the blocks of the symmetric group. Like there's a Schober on the affine Coxeter arrangement. So you take the affine type A Coxeter arrangement. Oh, sorry, affine type B P Coxeter arrangement, where P is the prime you're working over. And there's a Schober where, like, when you look at the real version of that, on each of the chambers, you put a different block of the representation theory of Sn for lots of different n's. And this like proof of Bray's conjecture is essentially like the construction of a perverse Schober that like connects all of those categories together.
That's really cool. Yeah. I like that geometric interpretation.
Yeah. Never thought about it quite like that, but that is what's happening. I think.
Yeah, that's cool.
Should think about that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of things are worth understanding better.
Cool.
All right. Well, I have a meeting that I should get to.
All right.
Thanks a lot.